In a discussion of impulsivity, we also have to talk about anger management. So here's how that works. I have patients in my practice who have a problem with angry outbursts. They're in trouble. They're in trouble often with their wives who have sent them in to get fixed, because what happens is that for any number of reasons, and we'll talk about some of those reasons, boom, that anger comes out suddenly as if you couldn't catch yourself. It's there. It's out there. And it can be as simple as saying something hurtful, or it can be throwing things at people, scaring people, threatening their lives, domestic violence. You get the idea. And you know now, because you understand impulsivity, you know that the angry outburst is impulsive. It's as if you couldn't think about what you wanted. It's like, do I really want to say that? Do I really want to do that? You did not have that ability. So you can't really change yourself in such a way as to think that in that moment, I'm going to have more self-control, because that doesn't work. All you have to do is to come at it from a much more fundamental direction, whereby it's, and we're talking, you think it through, you think about what it is, you think about what kind of person you're going to be and what kind of principles you're going to live by, and then what you're going to do in order to address that problem. It can be rather complicated. So, in that kind of, let's talk about anger management in general. I'm going to talk about it kind of in a nutshell. Angry behavior is always wrong. Now, there is a rare exception. That rare exception says sometimes angry behavior is justified, but you need to believe that is a rare time. We're talking righteous indignation or fighting for what's right, but in your family, you don't want to be fighting at all. Ideally, you're not reacting to what's coming at you. You're thinking about how to respond. Notice that's a slower, more time-consuming process than just reacting, right? So now we're lining up impulsivity with reactivity. Reactivity is having an emotional reaction, blurting something out as if to react to something, when a response is something that you think about. You have the thought, how should I respond to this? You see the difference. So in ADHD, we're reacting impulsively with anger, right? So I believe that the solution, the remedy, is the opposite. If we go from this reactive, impulsive type, what would the opposite be? The opposite would be the man who doesn't react at all. So there are a couple of things come to mind. Imagine, this is going to sound silly, imagine you're a Buddhist sitting on a mountaintop way over there somewhere for years, and the only thing you're thinking about is you're meditating on being calm. And you don't talk to people. You just calm your mind, and when you're with other people, you don't say anything. You're calm. You're quiet. Now, come back over here to America and imagine a wise man. Imagine an older man, well-respected, self-assured, successful. A wise man doesn't say anything until it's time to say something wise. Notice the slowness of that. Can you define yourself as someone who doesn't speak until there's something wise to say? It requires considering perhaps a significant change in your personality, but look at the personality that you have now, the kind of personality that has these angry outbursts and hurts people or threatens people. But, you know, it is threatening. It's very threatening to the other person's safety when somebody is raging out of control. Do not underestimate that. And so when the wife reacts to that and says, you know, if you don't get help, I'm out of here, it's because she's afraid for her own safety and that of the kids. It is not unreasonable for her to take that position. Your personality needs work, and I'm making a suggestion here that you develop that skill whereby maybe you can develop a way to catch yourself before you go off. I actually have this problem, and I think I've reined it in pretty successfully, although that's another story because I'm not perfect at it. But I remember this time, I'm going to say maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I had this patient whom I had seen. I was seeing him in the office for the third time, and this time he came in with his wife. And in the previous appointment, we talked a lot, and I said, you know, it seems like you might be struggling with depression. And so then when his wife came in, she just kind of, I could tell she walked in the room that she was ready to take me on, that didn't even know me. And so I kind of gently, you know, kind of got the conversation going a little bit. I know that when the spouse comes in, there's usually something the spouse wants to say. So shortly we got to that point, and I asked her what her concerns were, and she said something like, last time you told him he was depressed and you had made him worse. Well, there was something about the way she said that sounded very critical. It sounded like she was telling me I didn't know what I was doing. And I can tell you that in that moment, I started to get angry. I was ready to throw them out of the office. If you don't like the care you're getting here, go somewhere else. That's the calm way of describing what was actually going on in my mind. But I remember saying to myself, I do not want to let that anger out of my mouth. Do not, do not, do not. And I felt something in my belly, call it a tension. And I felt it rise up to my chest. And it took a second or two to do that. But I thought, that's my warning that I'm getting ready to blow. So I thought, my job right now is to sit here and say nothing, nothing, say nothing. Meanwhile, she's telling me what she's thinking. And by the time she finished, I was able to say, I know what I'm doing, and I know what I saw last time, and I'm going to stick with my opinion that depression is a reasonable thing to think about. Notice what happened there. Number one, I do not want to let that out of my mouth. I knew that already. I'd been working on that for years. Secondly, I do not want to run these people off. These are patients. I need to be enough of a professional not to have an emotional reaction to whatever walks into this room. Okay. Thirdly, I had already decided that in a situation like that, I default into silence. Say nothing. giving myself then those few moments to think about what would be wise to say. And it worked. It worked, and he became one of my, I call it a success story. I mean, it turned into a very, very good and satisfying doctor-patient relationship. He improved significantly over the next couple of years and eventually told me that because of the work we had done together, that he was happier than he'd ever been. That's just that contrast kind of shows you what's on the line there. Had I let that angry behavior out of my mouth, then I would have lost the opportunity to help the patient, and this particular patient, our relationship was life-changing for him and extremely gratifying for me. So, moving on to perhaps the last point in this discussion of anger management, there are always compounding factors. The patient who has the angry outburst is not just having angry outbursts because he has ADHD. He's having angry outbursts because of his environment. Yes, he's got an internal problem, but his environment is easily provoking him. His environment is a lot about what he has chosen, all right? If he has a wife and six children, all under the age of six, he chose that, all right? But it's still easily a stressful, hectic environment to live in, which would then set him up to snap every now and then with these angry outbursts. There are other types of family stress. Let's say that the wife's mom has dementia and the wife is away a lot, and because the wife's away a lot, nobody's taking care of the home, nobody's taking care of the kids, the family's under stress, angry outbursts, all right? Let's say the guy with the angry outburst doesn't feel good. He's got physical health issues, all right? He's got, let's say, back pain. Chronic back pain that fluctuates. That guy has a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress going on, just managing that pain issue. He is setting, and that is another compounding factor for this problem with angry outbursts. In addition, we live in a society of anxiety. That's what I've come to call it. That actually was a suggestion of one of my patients. In this society of anxiety, we set ourselves up for a lot of anxiety. You know, in this culture, you know, we have high expectations of ourselves, and we have high expectations of other people, and they have high expectations of us that we not only allow and agree with, but we all kind of encourage each other to be in this high expectation state, in which we're doing too much all the time. That's not ideal. By any means, it is something that's not well thought out by the individual or by the individual family. And so it is important then to realize that if I'm under a lot of stress, it's because the decisions I'm making, I've got too much on my plate, but it's all because of what I've chosen. You know, even if some person in the family is ill, okay, well, I've chosen to be dutiful to my family member. But the point is that you have to keep an eye on what you expect of yourself, because if you expect a whole lot of yourself, then you're stretching yourself thin, and you snap easily, because the next stressor that comes along, you fire off another angry outburst because you just don't have any reserve to control yourself. You don't have that pause to slow down and think about how you're going to respond, okay? Let's say your 12-year-old got into serious problems at school and now you're pissed. Okay, that is not the time to talk to that 12-year-old when you're pissed, when you're angry. What you learn is, I don't need to talk about this for a couple of days. I'm the dad, I'm the mom, My kid knows that. What I need to do is to think. I need to think this through and take plenty of time to do it because my response needs to be that well thought out response that is best for my child. I want to be careful not to react to any sense of embarrassment I have over my child's behavior. Because what's more important than that embarrassment is my child. This is my child. I'm responsible for the most important person on the planet. I want to be wise and intentional about my parenting. I don't want to react. I want to respond. So we've talked about how compounding factors then will take this problem of angry outbursts, which is an example of impulsivity. 100 years ago, Sigmund Freud, who's known to be the father of psychiatry, presented a paper called The Structural Model of the Mind. And what he was offering was a model is a way to think, that I'm offering this way of thinking about how the mind is actually structured. And so this is then becomes the discussion of the id, the ego, and the superego. The superego is our moral structure. It's the values that we grow up with that guide us in our decision making. The id is that area that has to do with feelings and impulses and drives, those somewhat unconscious things that lack any real thought. And then there's the ego. The ego is the executor of the mind. The ego is that CEO, the one that is responsible for implementing the moral structure and for controlling the feelings and the impulses. The ego, therefore, is responsible for making sure that you live the life that you really want to live. Having thought about who you are, having thought about what you want, having made plans for how you're going to live out the life that you want and where you want to be at that later. All those plans are thoughts. And you also have thoughts about how you choose to behave. This is so, I was asked this question once by a therapist. He said, when you finally become the man that you would like to be, what do you look like? And after thinking about it for a moment, I said, in my life, I have been, there have been half a dozen men who were kind and gracious to me, not because I was important to them, but because that's who they were. They were confident, self-assured men who were kind and gracious to me when I knew I wasn't important enough to deserve that kind of treatment. It wasn't about me. And so I thought, I want to be that way. I want to think of myself as having successfully become a kind and gracious man. All right. So in this discussion of ego, it's like, who do you want to be? Do you want to be a kind and gracious and gentle person when you finally become the person that you want to be? If so, you're going to have to control your id. You're going to have to control the feelings, the impulses, and the drives with your ego. I think you're getting the idea. We got feelings, and then we've got thoughts. The thoughts are responsible for your living your life according to what you really want. Your feelings are about going with the flow, and you don't know where that flow is going to take you because it's not being regulated by your ego. Now, this is not to say that you can't ever feel anything or that you can't do something spontaneous, but it does mean that your ego should be in control because that's what it's there for. So, in this sense, of self-control, mind control, controlling impulsivity with your ego, with that part of your mind that is capable of seeing to it that you are and become the person you choose to be. So then I have a rule, stay in your ego. Not an absolute rule, but it's a pretty good one. When you can stay objective and thoughtful and mindful about who you are and what you're about, then you will be implementing a level of control over these weaknesses we've been talking about, and you'll be successful. You'll be successful to some degree, and you may easily be much more successful than you might think. I think we'll end on that note. Oh, sorry. We can't end on that note. There's one more segment. All right. Maybe I'll do this next segment as its own video. So we'll just do a little editing here at the end.